Young Entertainment Professionals.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of the Young Entertainment Professionals podcast. I'm your host, Libby Ulrich, and today we have two of our very own board members, Maddie Sundquist and Steven Denninger. They are both involved in events and education on the board, so we're going to be talking a lot about their roles as well as their experience in management and publishing. Additionally, they are involved in our Coast to Couch virtual events on Facebook, so be sure you go replay those episodes on our Facebook page right now. We also talk about navigating the job board right now, so if you just graduated college, they really do share some encouraging words and perspective for those of you that are in that stage of your career. So I'm very excited for you to get to know them and how they've been involved in YUP and just more about their thoughts on the music industry as young entertainment professionals. Now to our episode with Maddie and Steven.
Well, everybody who's listening to this podcast, welcome to our first fireside chat version of the YUP podcast.
Literal fireside.
Can you hear it? Everyone pause for a moment of silence. Not too close because I don't want to burn my mic. But we've got two very special guests with us. Maddie Sundquist. Did I say that right?
Yes. From as far as I've been told.
Amazing. You've been a part of the YUP team for quite a while. We knew each other in college.
I don't know if you recall this, but my first job at Belmont in the alumni relations department, you were also a student worker there. Freshman year and your senior year, I think.
We were in that little small office.
Small office. Those offices still exist.
They do.
Yeah. One of the few buildings Belmont hasn't.
I think, what did we do? Did we just print things and file?
I honestly can't remember. I was just so nervy the entire time, and I wore, like, business dresses that I thought I was supposed to because we were in the alumni department. But, yeah.
Well, it brought you far.
Okay. I guess.
Or it did. It did. You're a manager. You're now a music manager. Steven Day is one of your artists.
Yes.
Who we just had on the podcast.
Yes.
Sawyer.
Yes.
Is another duo that you've been managing for a while. And then you have a lot of other management ventures. And have been the director of education for YUP.
That is my current title, and it's been fun to be given the opportunity. Caroline Melby just kind of gave me the handoff when she rolled off the board, and I feel lucky to have the role.
I love it. Well, you've also been working closely with someone else who's here, Steven Denninger.
Did I get it right?
I got it right. The co-director of events, and you have a extensive background in music publishing, also music entrepreneurship. So share more with the group. Well, yeah. With the listeners and the group here.
Absolutely. Thanks, Libby. And it is kind of funny, the small worlds that we all live in. So my very first memory of knowing you is a similar Belmont situation as well. And it's just really fun to have a chance to talk with y'all today about what we've been doing since we were spending time in the Beeman. You know, as far as you know, my last couple of years have gone, had some great opportunities to work in publishing for Universal Music Publishing and then Sony ATV as a song plugger. Have done some work with Exactuals, which is a music tech company that uses AI to help get songwriters paid more efficiently. The MLC just named them as one of their partners earlier today, so
nice.
That was exciting. And currently, professionally, I'm actually not working in music. I work for a tech company named Okta as a manager of customer success. Along with that, I'm working to start a music company that we talked about a little bit earlier and also survive a pandemic, because who would have thought that was what we were doing this year?
Who would have thought that we would be here talking about that?
What a wild era to just live through in general.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like I feel like we all graduated around the same time to mm-hmm. where when we got out, like we had bypassed the, I guess what those before us would say, like the 2008, like economy crash or whatever.
Oh,
like,
totally.
We left and we're like, okay, great. We have all these opportunities,
mm-hmm.
the internet, Spotify, Pandora, all of these streaming opportunities. And then 2020 comes along, and I feel like our generation was super excited about just having a brand new year. I think we're all at that point where it's like we've been out of college long enough to mm-hmm. have experiences that we have right now. So mm-hmm. to be approached with a pandemic for us as well has been, I don't even know.
It's been a lesson in resiliency.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I think for me, there was one thought that has always kind of comforted me throughout the pandemic, is that no matter how long you've been in the music industry, it could be 8 months, it could be 8 years, it could be 18 years, we literally all have the same amount of experience of working in a pandemic, you know? And so it was a learning process for everyone. And I definitely miss live shows a lot. Yeah. And I am so excited to get back to those.
Yeah, me too.
I have daydreamed and actually dreamed about this so many times. Just the euphoria of being in a live show once more, like in with people, hearing an artist, whether you've grown up listening to them or you just found them last week, because that's really the beauty of what we get to do, is discovering an artist in the venue. And the appreciation for that will be a very fun honeymoon period.
Yeah. Yeah. What's y'all's favorite show moment? Is there a specific show that, like, throughout this pandemic you've thought about that you were like, oh my gosh, I took advantage of that moment, or is something that I wish I could really relive again during this time?
I don't know. That's so hard, because I think that there are different moments, you know, for different times where, to me, I hold very fond in my heart the first time that I was in a random city and a room was packed and every person in the room knew words to Sawyer songs, or first time Steve sold out a venue and it was Mercy, and that was a cool experience, or even just like on a friend level too, like Jake Wesley Rogers, love that boy and I love his shows. There are things like that, but also in a different perspective, like, I remember there was one time when I was in high school at a Wiz Khalifa concert, and it was, I think, the first moment that I felt a unifying thing happening with everyone in this, like, not stadium or not arena. It was, like, UConn's basketball center. I guess it was an arena, but it was really cool. So I think there are different things for different levels and different sentimental moments for me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about you?
I think my first time back at the Basement East will have two very important meanings. The first one being the tornado that tore it up. I don't know if as a community we got to properly grieve for that disaster.
Doesn't that feel like eons ago?
Mm-hmm. It really does. And it was also yesterday at the same time. And I've driven by it earlier today. I mean, from the outside, it looks great. But the Charlie Worsham, Leonard Skinner throwback nights there, that's an event. I mean, you've got John Osborne and Charlie Worsham playing note for note some classic Leonard Skinner songs, which is what I consider my soul music.
Yeah.
That kind of a feeling, you can only get that show in Nashville. That is going to be a euphoric feeling.
Yeah. How do you think from working in tech for the past couple months, is there something about that industry that you hope prepares you for your next job in entertainment?
Yes. Something that I have heard in the past and has only started now to really hit my heart is that there are no music publishing emergencies. I right now get to work for a company that is the provider of security for many other companies. You know, it's on them that every employee, you know, at Warner Music Group, because that's one of our clients at Okta, can log in to their, you know, all their apps and what have you. And I'd be, having come from the publishing background, I mean, we would get into the office at Sony and listen to songs in the morning, and things are moving so fast in that kind of a level that you don't really think about your company back end or what's actually keeping you secure. So I've really appreciated getting such a granular view of that. But how that applies to music, like I said, with there are no music publishing emergencies, you know, there are emergencies when it comes to a security system going down for a major company. For a music publishing company, you know, we're working with songs, and that's a hell of a blessing to keep in mind.
How has Yep made you feel connected, even though your job right now isn't in the industry? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people, because I eventually want to get to that. There's probably a lot of people that were in the entertainment industry listening to this that had to switch careers because of what's happened this year. So share more about how Yep has kept you connected.
Well, so going back before the pandemic started, I had been working at Exactuals, which is a music tech company. Mm-hmm. So outside of the more creative side of music, but still in the business, Yep allowed me to feed my creative side through Writers Rounds and the Yep Rewind shows that we would put on. Since the pandemic has started, Maddie with the education team has done such a good job of setting up live events on whether it's Facebook Live or something along those lines. And, you know, they don't really do the same as bodies in the room for a live show, but having those initiatives has been helpful.
As an artist, you're often misunderstood. You deserve a partner who gets you. You need a bank that's driven by dreams of what could be and not just what is. Our friends at Pinnacle Financial Partners offer relationship-focused service with a team-based partnership approach, local decision-making, 24/7 support, experts that understand your area of the industry, and start-to-finish financial services. To learn more about how to collaborate with Pinnacle Bank in the creative community, call 615-744-2881 or visit pinnaclebank.com.
Share more about the virtual events that you've been putting on and what was your goal setting those up to communicate with people?
The thing is as everyone thought, the pandemic would last for a month, maybe two.
Just kidding.
November. We really didn't think that, one, the pandemic would go on for that long, but also I thought about it as an opportunity to collaborate with our Yep LA team. Because, you know what, the internet is a beautiful thing, and it presented an opportunity. Like, I really like to look at challenges and see what opportunities can come from them.
Yeah.
And so this was one where it was like, okay, online panels and seminars are like a really big thing right now. What if we did that? And we really engaged our online community, which is where a lot of our membership comes from. Mm-hmm. And so how about we do that and try to help our developing LA chapter? And that team was also incredible to work with. And it was so nice to hear perspectives from multiple cities, because we're working in different genres for the most part in different cities, and you find different people with different connections and things like that. So there's y'all, you can't tell, but there's so much smoke in my face right now.
Hold on a second.
Meanwhile, Maddie's eyes are burning. It's kindling the fire there. Bless Steven, shout out.
Yeah, so it was really just, why don't we start there? And then it just kind of kept going until it felt like a good way to end the quote-unquote semester. And hopefully we should be getting those back up in the new year. Or I don't know when this is going live, so maybe they already are happening.
Maybe they're already happening. We might have one next week. Who knows? At this point. I really feel like virtual events have really been... Do you feel like it's been an opportunity for everyone to reflect on why they do what they do? Because I think that every single time I see a virtual event or I've watched a virtual class, I hear, you know, said person talking about how their industry has been affected and what they're doing to adapt. And so how do you feel like this virtual event trend has helped you adapt as a professional?
Well, I think for me, there were just things that I wanted to learn about that I honestly was like, we should do the panel on this. So, like, I'm so fascinated with, like, video game streaming and, like, what that industry is and how much it can be really influential on music and culture. And so we had a panel with someone from Twitch and then someone who works with gamers. And then the other person on the panel was a music supervisor. And mm-hmm. all of their parts of that puzzle were so different, but also so informative for someone who's just trying to learn more about the area. And
yeah.
And with those people coming from, I think they were, for the most part, from California, we wouldn't have had that opportunity
right.
before. But in terms of the reflection, I think everyone is just trying to figure out what the right answer is. And the reality is there's no right answer into, like, figuring out how to build your business in a different way if you've been, well, there is a right answer somewhere in that, but mm-hmm. it's really just a puzzle that you have to figure out by trial, you know?
Yeah. And I want to hear about y'all's experience graduating and getting into the music business and what you feel like the challenges are going to be for those that have graduated this past year and any sort of encouragement you can offer them in kind of a time where we may not have tons of advice just with the amount of transition and change that we're all going through.
Mm-hmm. For me, my experience graduating from college was honestly kind of different. Not in the way of like I went to Belmont. That is one of the quintessential Nashville stories.
It is.
But I graduated from there, and I was very fortunate to have I was in a position where I felt like leaving Belmont, I knew a lot of people a lot more than probably the typical college student.
Yeah.
And so I left there and I was like, I should have a job, and I didn't have a job, but I had a mentor that was like, you know what, Maddie, you know exactly what you want to do, and you want to manage Sawyer and Stephen Day, because I was working with them. That's when I started in college. And so I was very fortunate enough to find two part-time jobs in the music industry, and I did those for about 2 years while I was trying to support myself and have like a stable income. And so I did those, and then 2 years passed, and then I was at a point where I could just support myself off of management, and I've been lucky enough to be able to do that for a little over a year now, which
and
is
it
wild.
Has been such a joy watching Maddie get to that place.
Yeah.
Maddie and we were very fortunate to become friends about 5 years ago now through the
wild.
Belmont
it's
Pipeline Project. And the ability to watch your friends make a choice, you know, choose the road less traveled, the hard path, and see the sweat equity that it takes to make that work.
Right.
I don't know if that gets properly talked about just enough, you know, as far as leaving college goes, and Libby, something you said earlier about the generation of college students before us came into their attempts to get into the music industry during a very tough time for employment in general.
Yeah.
And where I'm going with that is just that I remember being told by a senior in Belmont that about 6 out of 600 graduating seniors in his major were going to land employment. And I was like, well, 10% success rate sounds pretty darn awful. So let's try to figure
Not
out how to up the chances
right.
of that 10% number. And you know, when I graduated, I was very fortunate to have already had a job at a corporate music publishing company for about 5 months at that point. You know, I got that job not because of any homework that I did, but because of the homework I didn't do by going to live shows. And college students right now don't get the ability to forsake homework to go to live shows. And I have a lot of empathy for that situation. The flip side of that is that the music industry seems to be doing a better job of recognizing opportunities for the opportunities that they are. I think you see the quicker monetization of newer platforms. They don't have to be viewed as adversaries. They have to be viewed as partners now, because you're not going to be able to just make them go away. And I think that long term, you definitely want to bet on those 22-year-olds who are really pissed off and now have an opportunity through, you know, the internet and non-traditional means
right.
to figure out a way to work in entertainment. So that has me enthusiastic, but once again, that is a really tough road to walk, to have gone all the way through a process of trying to get employed to face a pandemic.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I can't even imagine, because I remember when I graduated, I still wasn't, I mean, I didn't even know if I was going to go in the music industry. That wasn't really necessarily an intention, but it's still such an up in the air time for everybody. And I just can't imagine dealing with the stress of that plus a pandemic year. But I really feel like you said, there's a lot of opportunity to partner with tech nut companies, get in that world, because, I mean, it's blowing up.
Mm-hmm.
That truly side is blowing up.
There are a lot of opportunities right now in that space, and it's really quite astonishing what they can do.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember there was a company called BeatDap, and where they are at right now, I actually don't know, but when I worked with them via Exactuals, you know, they were really touching on some great ways to help independent artists make more money.
Yeah.
Creating a company that lets an artist make more money is really the right side of history to be on.
Right.
That's intriguing.
Maddie.
Yes.
Question. So going off of that, you manage a couple artists here and there.
Yes.
During this time, what would you recommend for, I mean, I feel like an up and coming and somebody that's not up and coming, what is the best way you feel like is to spend their time during this? Because I think occupying the mind and the creative soul during this time is one of the most important things. So how have you encouraged your artists to make the most of their time during this year?
I mean, ultimately you just need to create, but you also need to give yourself the space to rebalance if you need it. And because one thing that we tend to, or me on a business side, sometimes I need a little bit of reminding,
yeah,
is that it's creating music is such a emotional thing to do.
Yeah.
And you can't always churn it out. Like, there are different forms of creatives and and respecting those boundaries and all that kind of stuff. But if you have the ability to just write every day and create copyright, and the more copyright you can create and the more you can put out there, the better. I mean, if you're a developing artist, the more songs you can put out that you feel represent who you are as an artist, that's incredible. And I always talk about how the music industry is a little bit of a box, or a release cycle is a little bit of a box, but it's really how you play within the box and how you fill those things. And all the answers are online, you know?
They really are.
If you are trying to figure out, how do I get Spotify playlisting, look at Spotify for artists. Like, they give you the answers because they get the questions so often. Like, they are trying to help you engage on their platform and grow your business, you know?
Yeah.
Grow your fan base. And what are you doing now in order to make it when the world can tour again and everything's open? What are you doing right now to create more fans and create community around your business?
Love that. Do you have any thoughts on that, just from like working in publishing, maybe like for the songwriter?
Yeah, well,
is it kind of the same thing, you feel like?
Well, when I was listening to what Maddie said, I really liked what she said about the answers are there on the internet for a lot of the bigger picture initiatives that you want to take. What I'm finding right now is the more that I do my homework, the more that I do my research as many times as possible, that empowers me to then go make a phone call and in 5 to 15 minutes get more done in that phone call than I ever have before, because I've done the homework beforehand.
Yeah.
So, like, where that leads into is, you know, as far as what it looks like to stand up, you know, a publishing company.
Yeah.
No idea what that really will be just yet. But thankfully, this isn't exactly reinventing the wheel.
Yeah.
Other people have done this. Other, you know, you look on the trades right now, this is being done quite frequently. So having relationships to lean on, to ask good questions, having done research, has really opened up new doors.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly if that answered the question that you were asking, but I'm kind of lost at this point.
I think from what I also remember of the question, I think that answers it. But even with that too, like, because I think I have a marketer's brain. I think that's the way that my brain functions a lot. And you can do research in a different way. Like, it's not going to, there can be those like indie articles, like this is how you release a song, you know, or the things through distribution.
Yeah.
But also, I know for me, when I was leaving college, because I'm still working with two independent artists that I've helped grow from, like, they were just a speck in their mother's eyes, you know?
Yeah.
And so with that, there are also kind of release outlines on the internet. Like, look at some of your favorite artists that are on major labels and see what they did. Look at the timestamps. Create your own release calendar, you know? There are so many ways to learn by just looking.
Yeah.
Just the simple act of looking for it, you can learn.
Mm-hmm. And just calling your friends, too. Like, when it comes to whether that be artists or songwriters that are doing similar things, just different lanes, like, just catching up. Mm-hmm. And it means so much right now to just call somebody and say, hey, I'm thinking about you. I care about you. Mm-hmm. So being able to work those conversations in is really important at the moment. And like Maddie, with your artists, I imagine that despite them being independent artists, they get inquiries from their peers who are also independent mm-hmm. artists. Like, how are you doing this?
Yeah.
And when you get asked that question, I imagine there's a conversation you have.
It's kind of just like paying attention to your fans and what they're doing and what are they interested in. And like, because ultimately, there's one thing that Kel told me. Kel is one of the two girls in Sawyer, Kel Taylor, Emma Harvey. And Kel said their whole reason of creating music is to make people feel seen, heard, and understood. And that's ultimately what we're all searching for as people. And it's like part of the conversation that we have too is, what are the ways that we can gift fans something? Like, we should not be taking things in our business. We should just try to give.
Yeah.
Because ultimately that'll circle back. But like, the more you give as a person, mm-hmm. kind of the happier you are in life. And so I think that there are a lot of artists within our circles too who are exceptional examples of giving back to their fans and growing their mm-hmm. business and understanding what they should do in order to reach more people who will like them as well.
Yeah. I think to your point about giving more than you're taking in this business, like, I think it almost helps with that need for constant validation too, because mm-hmm. I think we are in a business, I'm just gonna say it, it's like, it's a need, a constant need for, I'm talented, I am, you know, I'm seen, I'm this, like, and it's flipping that script a little bit, I think, even as an artist, is so important, because then you lose that anxiety, especially when we go through times like this. And I'm not, like, patting anyone, like, not, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. not in a scolding tone, but it's just kind of like, I think that perspective in general gets rid of that anxiety of, like, validation in this industry.
Totally. And I think, too, that we're kind of all in a point where we want to prove ourselves prove that we're supposed to be here. And like, hell, I've had to go to therapy to try to work on that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think everyone should go to therapy. I love my therapist, but once you can kind of push that insecurity away, because ultimately searching for that affirmation is just feeding a form of our own insecurity. Mm-hmm. As soon as you can kind of start to move that to the side, you can really start to see yourself. And I think that for me, especially coming out of college, I put a lot of my value as a person in what I did and making sure that I, or trying to prove that I was enough, that I was allowed to be in a room to talk to someone. Yeah. But ultimately, we're all just humans and we're all learning.
Yeah.
And people are kind. And
it's not as big a deal as we thought it was.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And we are a highly competitive business full of wildly insecure individuals. I certainly am. I think we all are in our worst
moments.
In
our ways, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that I think about really often is that we're all sort of insecure, at least in some way, shape, or form.
I think if you're not insecure to a degree, there's something wrong with you.
Totally.
Because you care.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, but also part of that is like being in music, you're a bit egotistical because you think of the statistical anomaly that this entire industry is. I'm going to be the one that makes it. But like you also need that. It's confidence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's a rock and a hard place, really.
It's better to identify it.
Totally. Totally.
And then just know where it's coming from, because I think that also like creates better community when you know where you stand with yourself as a creative person.
Mm-hmm.
Lydia,
mm-hmm.
I'm glad you mentioned that, you know, the whole concept of creating community,
mm-hmm.
whether that is, you know, 3 people or 30,000 people. I get so excited by the ones that create community.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've seen a lot of examples in our own Nashville circles mm-hmm. here of individuals that didn't have much going on for them, but made an initiative to create community. I mean, look at Whiskey Jam.
Yep.
Why Not Wednesdays? I think that a lot of the work that Noreen Pruner did for pop in Nashville, I mean, create community. It's just such a beautiful thing, and so few people do that.
Yeah.
Mamba knows that responsible business and financial management is the key to lasting success. Their team helps new artists gain solid financial footing to launch successful careers and help industry veterans maintain strong financial foundations. Martin Albee Miller Bryan & Associates is located on Music Row in Nashville, Tennessee, and has been serving the business and financial needs of the music industry since 1981. For more information, call 615-383-1161 or visit them online at martinalbee.com.
How have y'all found a community? Because I feel like y'all have worked together a lot. So I want to hear more about how you've worked together on certain Yep projects and like what that's been like.
What's wild is I don't think Steven and I have really ever worked on anything together except for this episode and like an incubator that we were in college.
Mm-hmm.
I think we set up one or two writes, but that was pretty much it.
We did a pop camp.
Oh yes, we did that. And that was me, Steven, Shelby Yoder, Sam Jervy, and then Noreen as well. We did that. But I think that's kind of the extent of it. And then also on the Yep board. But
yeah,
I think there are also times when both of us are trying to learn something about what the other one has an expertise in.
Yeah.
And it'll just be like a call like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing.
We have very different interests.
That is very true.
And that's just been the cornerstone of a beautiful friendship.
Okay, so can y'all share an interest, like a difference in interest that you have? For example, I mean, we could start with music.
I do not like Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Exactly. And there's a lot of things that, well, all right, so I took it was supposed to be a 12-hour road trip a few weeks ago. It turned into a 17-hour road trip.
Okay.
And I asked Maddie to send me a playlist of stuff that she was listening to lately because I was going to have time to burn. I really respect her opinion, and I know that nothing on her playlist was going to be posited by my algorithm.
Yeah.
So, just for whatever that's worth.
So if we go on your recently played on Spotify, it's very polarizing.
Oh, yes.
Like, we were texting back and forth, and I referenced a rap lyric, and then I explained, like, what it was. And I was like, oh, you should listen, because it was off of one of my favorite albums is Drake's Take Care album.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, that's, like, I quoted it as we were talking, and then I was like, you're not going to get it anyway. But then I sent him the songs, you know? So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciated listening to them. And, you know, like yesterday I played the song for somebody Christofferson's To Beat the Devil. And that song, I called that a three-listen song because it took me till the third listen to even begin to get what Christofferson was talking about. I believe that there would be a number of Drake songs where I could listen to 12 times and not know what he's getting at. But I respect that kind of songwriting because you thought about the idea.
For anyone listening, or Libby, if you're interested.
Okay, I'm interested. I hear you.
I love sentimental rap songs. I think one of the cool parts of hip-hop culture is that you always give thanks back to, whoever helped you. And I think that's...
I'm actually hearing songs in my head right now where you're that with that example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in almost every genre, I think that's very prominent, but they're always album cuts.
Yeah.
But there's this Drake song called Look mm-hmm. What You Done.
Yeah.
And the first verse is about thanking his mom. Second verse is thanking his uncle. And I feel like he was one of the first people to really start putting voicemails in songs. And so the outro is a voicemail from his grandma.
Yeah.
And it's just really sweet. And Kanye
and
has
songs
like
that. Very few people do that well. Some people throw voicemails in the beginning. I'm like... No, you gotta work your way to putting voicemails in the beginning of songs. You have to be the level. Yes.
There was one song, though, that I actually recently rediscovered, and it's called White Girl Voice, and the whole concept is, don't be surprised if I send you a voicemail, and he just is hit you with a white girl voice, and it's just kind of the voicemail standard, this person is not available. And I was like, that was a smart way to do that.
It was. I need to listen to this after.
I'll send it to you. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, text it to me.
Yeah.
And I'll listen all the way home.
Cool.
Yeah. I need to know, what do you listen to? Do you listen to podcasts?
I do, yes.
Yeah, what's your go-to?
So there is a podcast I'm listening to right now called What It Takes.
Okay.
Maddie, I may have sent you
an episode
of it. I may not have, but... It is a compilation of individuals that have truly gone above and beyond to show what it takes to achieve that level of success. And I'm about maybe 8 or 9 episodes deep. The first episode's with Johnny Cash, so if you've been paying attention to my music preferences, that won't disappoint you. But the second episode was with, oh my goodness, let me see, Desmond Tutu, who is a South African cardinal. Being Catholic, that carries a lot more weight when I hear that name. And, he was the chairman of the post-apartheid committee on, restoring peace and goodwill in South Africa. And, these men and these women, they've done things and they've been part of things that were just so incredible that we all have heard of them. But one of the things that Johnny Cash said was, if you step into a place once and they break your leg, my advice is don't go in there a second time. And the music that I love tends to revolve around that ethos of learning from mistakes, but admitting that mistakes were made. It's very difficult to find a songwriter writing compelling lyrics who hasn't lived some life. That generally includes fucking up a few times.
Mm-hmm.
So there are more similarities than differences in the music that Maddie and I like. But the chord structure is a little different.
I was about to say the exact same thing, because I think both of us, and I kind of, I grew up listening to Kanye, and that was, the most, I still say Kanye is my favorite artist.
I mean, what do you think of Kanye now?
I mean, I don't know the man, but I love his music.
Yeah.
And I think that mm-hmm. is what I'm going to say,
I love that. I love that answer, though, because I feel like... Do you feel like fans depend so much on what an artist was? They don't want them to evolve? Do you feel that, or is that a generalization?
I think for me as a manager, I often talk about with my clients, you don't have to make a decision on yourself for forever. You just have to make a decision on your what you want people to think about you for this album cycle, mm-hmm. And also making sure this is kind of a different thing to your question, but I think for artists it's really important to have a separation between who they are publicly and who they are privately. I know so much of the true selves of my friends that are artists than what they actually put on the internet. And like, once you get to know them, they're different things, but that's for a good reason. Like, you can't have people judging, like, they're already, fans are already judging your emotions. They can't also judge your character. You have to kind of put on like a public persona, I believe. But they're still authentic. They're still real, but it's not giving all of yourself. It's saving those special parts of you for those who know you and love you and care about you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. But I do love Kanye.
Yeah, he's great. I love him.
His lyrics are incredible, and really going into that, like, comment on, like, chord, like, it's just chord structure that's different. Mm-hmm. I don't really know much theory, I have to be honest, but, like, but a lot of the messages through different music and the way that it's smart lyrically, I think, is the same through a lot of what both Steven and I listen to.
Mm-hmm. And just general instrumentation. I mean, you know, as far as, you know, you asked about podcasts, the What It Takes podcast is a great one. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as music goes, Brent Cobb and Sturgill Simpson are two artists that are, you know, generally, you know, they're current and I enjoy them, but that all goes into what I call my soul music, which is like Marshall Tucker Band, Allman Brothers Band, that sort of music, because especially if, you know, if you listen to the Marshall Tucker Band, you understand, at least I like to think that every single instrument in there was agonized over, and every part, you know, was done from a place of improvisation, and then they honed it really well. As far as, you know, playing music goes, when you think about the concept of playing the same song at least 200 times a year, that's one of the greatest services you can ever do to a fan who loves your music. And, you know, you multiply that by 40 consecutive years, I have a hard time believing that song is still fun for you to play.
Right.
But you're still doing it because it really meant something. And it also, you know, paid for your life. Pretty incredible. And that, you know, that will happen with Kanye music 40 years from now. Mm-hmm. That has already happened with a lot of the music that I like. Mm-hmm. But there's a shared place of where it came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, going off of that, I want to close with the question of maybe, I'm trying to figure out how to best word this. Share something hopeful that you... Share something that you hope will happen within your area of the industry. Come the end of this year, next year, in the future. Doesn't even have to be like a timeline of like in 21. But just in the future, like, what do you hope happens in the area of management? And then what do you hope happens in the tech / entrepreneurial side of music?
Yeah.
I honestly kind of think, I don't really know the answer to that question, because for me, literally every single day is different. And I could tell you in theory what I have planned for 6 months from now, but clearly, like, that isn't a reliable thing to say, especially in this era of time. I think it's just growth and like learning. Ultimately, I think I can answer for myself. I want to learn more about songs, and I want to learn more about development and digital and what that does and how to grow in different parts of the world. Like, how do you create your business than more than just the United States? Like, obviously we have a thriving market, but there's so much more of the world to learn about. And to me, that's very fun and exciting and different. But there are so many managers who have done that already, you know, but speaking for myself, I just want to learn. What about you? Mm-hmm.
The opportunities between tech and music licensing, in that, you know, gaming, mobile gaming, console gaming, PC gaming, what have you, the way that integrates into the musical experience. You know, the last couple months have certainly expedited our palette for virtual events, and that will create more opportunities for music to live in places it didn't always live. You know, a friend of mine said this to me in about 2013, and I thought he was nuts at the time, and now it makes a lot more sense. But, you know, if you have a tribe of 1,000 hardcore fans, you know, you can make a pretty decent living off that base if they're willing to contribute to your art. And I do see more opportunities for that. It'll always feel really out of reach, but it feels like there are more and more opportunities for that. So for independent artists, for songwriters that maybe don't want to write to the chart but really want to write music that they don't want to compromise on, you've never had a better opportunity to not compromise on your morals for your music.
Love that.
Well, guys, it's great having this reflection on 2020
in
the music industry.
Thank you for having us.
Hey, absolutely. And can I give away y'all's Instagrams?
Yeah.
Everyone's sure. Always wants to know the Instagram handle. So, I mean, are you on Instagram, Steven?
I am. It's either at Steven Denninger or Steven.Denninger. Let's see.
For a long time, he was Instagramless Steven.
That is also, I held out for a long time, but it's at Steven Denninger.
Okay.
Steven with a PH. If you've seen
Steven
the meme,
with
you
a
get
PH.
It.
I actually typed in when I went to text y'all the other day, I typed in STEV and I was like, oh, dang
it. At least it wasn't PHTEVEN.
No.
But
you get that?
Steven with a PH. Yeah. I just find it funny.
Oh, I get it.
Now I get it. Maddie?
Mine is Mad Cat Sun. MADKATSUN.
Mad that sounds like a yoga studio I want to go to.
A fun fact is that was actually the first email my dad ever made for me. So it's like all my junk email. I can't even access for it. But it just stuck since like second grade.
Well, congratulations. It's really great.
Thank you.
Yours is great too, Stephen with PH. That should be your new Instagram handle. Because I bet no one has stolen that yet.
I'll take a look.
We need to change it in real time.
Yeah. How do you do that?
Let's see. Is that an iPhone 6?
It's a 7. It's pretty close to a 6. It's just, you know, one different. Let's see.
For all the artists out there who are thinking about changing their Instagram handles, realize that when you do that, it changes your URL.
Oh.
Yeah, so y'all got to update your websites when you do that. You can't be changing handles in one place and not in the other.
Update your Spotify. You want to make sure that
when your Squarespace goes out of date, you better know when it goes out of date.
It's true.
Because when we all go to your website, we're like, where can we listen? It says this website has expired.
Check that auto renewal.
Check that out. Quick little pro tips.
Oh, Libby, thank you for having us. And I can't seem to find where to change my username. So on such an embarrassing note,
I'm going to help you live.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Young Entertainment Professionals Podcast. To get connected, visit yepnashville.com and follow Yep Nashville and Yep Los Angeles on social media. I'm your host, Libby Ulrich. And until next time, discover, cultivate, accelerate.